Good morning and welcome into Locked On Patriots for Monday, February 19th, 2018, a President's Day edition of Locked On Patriots. Mark Schofield here with you in the big chair, as I will be all year and off-season long. Reminder to check out the work over at InsideThePylon.com. Got a piece up today. The return of my Check With Me column, where I kind of dive into a bunch of topics, usually quarterback-related. I've got a lot of thoughts as the combine is just around the corner. Also, check out the YouTube channel over at youtube.com/InsideThePylon. You see all the First Sound videos. Also, reminder, dailymockdraft.com, doing a Patriots mock draft every other day along with Doug Moore. Check those out as well. Today's show, we're going to dive into the off-season previews. They keep rolling on as well. We're going to talk about the offensive line. Patriots face some decisions with some guys up front. And later in the show, I'll be joined by Luke Inman, who's one of the hosts of the Draft Wrap podcast, also writes over at Zone Coverage. Most of his work is focused on either the Minnesota Vikings or the NFL draft itself. And Luke is one of the best guys in the business. Really, really good guy. Love spending time with him down in Mobile. As you'll see, just a joy to talk to. Knows the draft inside and out. He and I even go through some potential early round mocks for what the Patriots might do on the first and second days of the NFL draft. But before that, let's get into some of the decisions facing the Patriots up front. And we start with the big one. That's Nate Solder. Patriots left tackle, currently 29 years old. He is an unrestricted free agent. And the Patriots are probably going to have to give him a raise. The AAV on his 2017 contract was just a hair over $10 million. According to SportTrack, you're looking at, you know, an AAV on his next deal for about $13 million. But there are questions there because, as you know from the podcast appearance by Nora Princiotti, she did a great story on Nate Solder and his family. Obviously, his son is battling cancer. So the Solder family, there have been rumblings that he might sort of step away from the game, spend more time with his son than with his family as they're dealing with this than their son's illness. But if they can get him back, obviously, I believe plan A for the New England Patriots is to get Nate Solder back, because despite the fact that he was 29, despite sort of the slow start to this season, he is still a very solid left tackle for the New England Patriots. And as we'll discuss with Luke here in a few moments, if Tom Brady's still your quarterback, job one has to be protecting him. So you want to make sure the guy on the left side is going to be there down in, down out, game in, game out. And as well as Brady moves around in the pocket, you still need to make sure that his blind side is protected. So I'd imagine that if he wants to come back, the Patriots will do everything they can to get Solder back. But they've got some question marks with some other guys. Cameron Fleming enters free agency. He's only 25. Adrian Waddle enters free agency as well. He's 26. So you've got, you know, your left tackle, Nate Solder, entering free agency. You've got two guys that spent a lot of, you know, that saw a ton of snaps at the right tackle spot. Cameron Fleming and Adrian Waddle entering free agency. Obviously, you'll get Marcus Cannon back healthy. Patriots will also get Antonio Garcia back healthy. Garcia missed all of the 2017 season, his rookie season, with an injury. So they'll be getting some guys back. They also return Joe Thuney, David Andrews, Shaq Mason, the interior of that line. But given those question marks and given, you know, I don't want to say the interior of the line was bad in it at all this season, but you always should look to upgrade, again, with the goal being protecting Tom Brady and keeping him upright. So there are a couple of reasons why the Patriots might sort of be in on an offensive lineman at some point in this draft. If Solder walks, they'll definitely need to get another tackle in here. You lose both Waddle and Fleming, you're going to need at least some depth there. You know, and maybe you like one of the interior guys, one of the guards in this class, some interesting guards in this class. So maybe you look to see if one of those guys can sort of wrestle away a starting spot, get some competition in for camp. I've talked about Isaiah Wynn. You know, I think he's an interesting sort of guy to look at because of his versatility. You know, and in terms of free agents, you know, there's not a ton out there in terms of free agents. You know, Greg Robinson, left tackle. Chris Clark, another left tackle, but he's 32. Not sure you're really going to see teams make a big run at him. You know, the tackle market out there isn't that great. You know, Michael Schofield's 27, but not sure teams are going to make a run at him. It's just not a great sort of year for free agent offensive linemen. You know, we talked about Justin Pugh. I mean, he's a swing guy, guard slash tackle. Maybe the Patriots kick the tires on him. But depending on how things shake out, I'd imagine that they'll be at least looking at bringing in one or two offensive linemen through the draft. And up ahead, we're going to talk with Luke Inman about some of those guys and who some of those guys might be. That's ahead with me, Mark Schofield, and Locked On Patriots. Welcome into Locked On Patriots. Mark Schofield back with you here. We outlined sort of the lay of the land when it comes to the offensive line issues as the Patriots head into the offseason. Now to talk about some draft prospects, one of my favorite people in all of football media. He is at Luke_Spinman on Twitter, host of the Draft Wrap podcast, among many of the things that he does. Luke, my friend, how are you, buddy?
Boy, high expectations, man. Appreciate the generous intro. Always love coming on and talking anything draft and maybe some Patriots today too, huh?
We're going to get into some Patriots talk here at the outset. And I think since this is kind of an O-line show, what we're doing, I talked about it a little. But Luke, I want to get your thoughts. Obviously, the big decision up front for the Patriots is Nate Solder heads into free agency. As a guy that outside looking in, you're a Vikings guy. Yeah. Patriots bring him back, right? You think that's what they would do?
100%. I mean, I know, you know, just looking again on the outside looking in, Vikings guy, kind of a draft guy, but looking at the Patriots situation, Mark, I think they got close to around $15 million. You do whatever you can to bring back Nate Solder. I think in a league that's just thirsty for good offensive tackles, guys that can pass protect against some of these elite pass rushers that come out every single year, you look at a guy like Tom Brady nearing the end, a pure pocket guy. If you want to make a couple more Super Bowl runs here these last 2-3 years, you got to keep them upright, you got to protect them. Do whatever you can. And if that means letting a guy like Malcolm Butler go, which it sounds like maybe the writing's on the wall after that Super Bowl, maybe a guy like Deion Lewis or Rex Burkhead, again, you bring back the guys that are going to help protect Tom Brady, because Brady's going to make everybody else look good. And I think, again, if you can't keep him upright, then you're going to have problems.
Yeah, Luke, I think that's a great point about Brady. And, you know, as somebody that's been watching this team, you know, speaking with somebody on the outside looking in, I think it's a great to get your perspective on it, because Solder was kind of questioned early in the season. Brady was getting hit, but It seemed like the protection sort of got better as the season went along. And I'm with you. I think the Patriots do whatever they can to get Solder back in the fold. I think that makes sense. We're going to get to some potential other moves that the Patriots might make, Maybe mock some picks later. But if the Patriots do decide to address offensive tackle, offensive guard in this class, there are some guys that you're interested in that I want to ask you about. We talked before the show, some guys that you suggested we hit. And I want to start on the inside. You've got Joe Thuney, you've got Shaq Mason. They're pretty good guards, although Thuney got beat at times during the season in pass protection. Obviously, we saw Shaq Mason get beat on a critical play in the Super Bowl. If New England addresses the guard spot, there are two guys you've got in mind. And I want to start with Isaiah Wynn, an offensive tackle convert, kicking inside for the Senior Bowl for the University of Georgia. I like him, but Luke, what are your thoughts on this guy?
I love this kid, Ben. You mentioned him. We saw him down in Mobile, Alabama for a week. The guy just dominated, consistent. You know, Some guys flash at the end of the week. Some guys flash at the beginning. This guy flashed every single day, and he was dominant. And again, you mentioned it. Swung inside, was a four-year starter at left tackle. You love to see that. But kind of the shorter stature, squatty frame, if you will, powerful run blocker. I think it's going to translate great inside of the next level. Don't think, again, even though just a shorter stature, don't think he'd be able to handle the speed of some of these NFL rushers on the outside, but at guard, you put him in a phone booth, man, some tight spaces. I think he's a plug and play kind of guy for the next, you know, hopefully 8 years. And I think, again, I think the only thing that you're hoping or praying for, will he be there at what, pick 31, I think you guys have. So will he be there? I mean, if the Vikings are sitting there and they're looking at an interior and he's on the board, hate to say it, but I would hope they would pull the trigger on Isaiah Wynn because he's that good. Realistically, after such a good Senior Bowl, I would even have him projected as a top 25, 28 player, hands down. I've talked to a few guys that maybe said the Atlanta Falcons make some sense there, maybe as high as 23, 24 in that range. But certainly, again, Combine's going to play a big factor here in the next 2 weeks. We certainly know that. Stocks will rise and fall, but I think right now Wynn's got a ton of momentum on his side, and I think you're just rolling the dice hoping he would land there at 31. If he is, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's amazing, Luke, kind of seeing the rise of Isaiah Wynn over the past couple of weeks, because going into the Senior Bowl, there were a lot of questions. Can he really sort of kick inside? Will he be able to do it? Or is he just a guy that's going to be a guy without a position really in the NFL because he can't make the switch? But the rise of Isaiah Wynn over the past couple of weeks, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, the Patriots might be able to get him with their first pick in the second round. But when you talk about the way he's risen, and you're saying, like you're saying, Vikings might get him early, that shows you that this guy, he might move into the top 20, top 15 when all is said.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, it goes back to, again, the NFL, Mark, is just so thirsty for good offensive linemen. I think the real epidemic in the NFL is all these kids out of high school, these top recruits, and I can't blame them, and nor should anyone else, but they'd rather, you know, play the sexy position of a defensive end, an edge rusher, an interior lineman that can post a lot of sacks, post a lot of tackles for loss, makes the splash plays, as opposed to sitting there and quote-unquote being that boring blocker. So I think that when you get a guy like Isaiah Wynn coming out, I know interior, like an offensive guard, isn't super highly rated just in general, kind of the stereotype in the NFL. We saw teams miss on guys like Jonathan Cooper and Chance Warmack in the top 10, but then you see teams like the Cowboys, you know, hit on Travis Frederick, the center at 31. They took a lot of heat for that, but my gosh, what a great pick when it's all said and done. So I think Isaiah Wynn, unless something goofy happens at the combine, which we've seen some weird stuff lead up even to the draft, you know, unless something goofy happens, I got him as a top 25, 28, somewhere in that range. Atlanta at 26. I don't know New Orleans is set up right now, but it seems like they would do the same thing as New England and try to protect Drew Brees these last 2-3 years, a pure pocket guy. Maybe Carolina if they lose Andrew Norwell. Just shaking the dice, though, hoping that he can fall to pick 31.
If they miss out on Wynn, another guy that you like, a guy I know absolutely nothing about, so I'm going to learn along with the listeners, Wyatt Teller from Virginia Tech. Luke, make the introductions to Mr. Teller.
Well, Teller is a kind of a goofy project because he's actually at his best earlier in his career. And what I mean is he came out of Virginia as the defensive player of the year. He actually started and was recruited for Virginia Tech as a defensive lineman. He flipped the script. He went on the offensive side of the ball. He looked great. And he looked great because his functional strength, his play strength, is off the charts. You're not really going to find too many guys that are stronger and again, you know, play with those heavy hands and can really move a lot of guys at the point of attack than Wyatt Teller. Now, where things get a little weird or kind of the wild card situation is he sort of slipped off this year. And now you got question marks because, you know, it's kind of like the Harold Landry, the tape on 2016. Harold Landry was phenomenal, but all of a sudden 2017 wasn't that great. So you're scratching your head going, which guy am I going to get? I think at the end of the day, you have to be confident in your coaching staff, your ability to develop guys, because Teller's got the raw size and, again, play strength that you dream of as a coach. But why did he slip off? It looked like he was almost a little checked out towards the end. But I even, you know, I say that, and then I look at PFF grades, and we were talking about this the other day. PFF has him as the top pass protecting guard in the college football last year, allowing only one pressure in 396 snaps. Wow. Don't necessarily agree with that, but it gives you a general idea, though, that Wyatt Teller can be and was actually pretty productive last year as well. So he's a guy. Combine's going to be huge. There's a lot of other guys that kind of the draft Twitter or general draft surface fan has, like Will Hernandez above him, Billy Purdy. price depending on where you like them. Again, we just talked about Isaiah Wynn. Obviously, Quentin Nelson's maybe the best player in this whole draft. But Wyatt Teller, very intriguing. If you're a team that has multiple seconds or maybe multiple third-round picks, I certainly would love to take a stab at him if he's still sitting there on day three. Again, if you're confident in your coaching staff that you can develop this kid, because, again, he was outstanding coming out of high school, really good right away, maybe slipped off in 2017, but, you know, even PFF says, well, there's still plenty to build off, especially in the passing game. So I like Wyatt Teller. I just think he's a name we should start to get to know now going into the combine.
Do you think, you know, any sort of guesses as to why he might have slipped off this past year? Was it a scheme thing? You know, running new offense or what?
It's a good question, Mark, and unfortunately, I don't really have an answer. I can't pinpoint it, but again, just the reports and the things that I've read, and anybody else can go read this stuff. I don't have an inside source at Virginia Tech, but it just seems like he looked and played like he was kind of checked out. I don't think there was a scheme switch. I don't know if maybe sometimes there's a coaching gaff. Sometimes there's an injury that we don't know about. Right. I mean, that's actually more times than not what it ends up being. So is he healthy? Again, combine is really more so for a lot of teams to do medical backgrounds and then obviously do a lot of the interviews, try to gauge a kind of the mentality of a lot of these kids. But I think Wyatt Teller maybe was hurt and we just didn't know about it. But it's tough to put a pinpoint on that, and it's anybody's guess. I mean, your guess is going to be as good as mine. But again, I just think that the body of work towards the beginning was there. The play strength is off the charts. And I think, hey, if you can get him in the third round, maybe you're just getting a steal. Maybe you're getting a value. It's worth a shot, especially a team who's got multiple day two picks.
Let's kick it outside a little bit here. And, you know, if the Patriots move on from Nate Solder, obviously they drafted Antonio Garcia last year, but they probably would add another offensive tackle to the mix. One of the two guys you want to talk about is Mike McGlinchey from Notre Dame. And, you know, I've seen him sort of listed at the top of the offensive tackle class. I've seen him listed maybe, you know, 8 or 9 by other people. It seems like people are around the board on him. Where are you on the ND kid?
Well, I love the kid, and I think he's really reminding me the situation that he's in. You mentioned it. He's all over the board. Yes, one guy, he's the number one tackle on their board. In fact, I had PFF's Mike Renner on. Mike McGlinchey was his number one tackle, as well as mine, so that made me feel a little bit better about myself. But I think again, you're right. You ask some guys, he's 7 or 8. He reminds me the situation, not the player type, but he reminds me of Jack Conklin. And I think he's a guy, Jack Conklin, who's all over the board, ends up going, I think, 16 or those mid-teens to Tennessee, maybe even earlier, 12, 13, somewhere in that mix. They move him to the right side, and he's been lights out. I mean, maybe not a Pro Bowl level, but man, I mean, plug and play from day one. He's been great. And I think McGlinchey, if you go back and watch his original tape early on, I like him better at right tackle. Don't think necessarily you can't start him out at left tackle and just see what he's got. Certainly played there at Notre Dame for his entire career. But early on, his first few I don't want to say years, but his first few games, he was at right tackle, and he looked phenomenal. I think Jack Conklin's a similar situation where he's a little bit safer of a pick than Connor Williams, who's going to have the dominating size. Orlando Browns, who's got the dominating size from Oklahoma. Connor Williams, heading in the year, was like a top 5 lock. He got hurt. Is he going to be healthy? Seems like a lot of people like those two names a little bit sexier, but Mike McGlinchey, a little bit safer, maybe not as high of a ceiling. But again, I think McGlinchey, yeah, go ahead, try him at left tackle, but if it don't pan out, I know I can play him at right tackle. And in today's day and age, you know, I don't think there's much of a discrepancy between the left and right tackle as there used to be. So you need both. I think they're very equal in how important they are. McGlinchey against Boston College, I mentioned Harold Landry, really shut him down this year, which was great. Harold Landry, although maybe took a step back this year as well, but certainly not a guy who dominated every single snap or every single game. But again, in a league that's thirsty for some good, pure, solid offensive tackle, tackles. McGlinchey, I think, in this draft is as good as it gets. And I think, again, he's got good athleticism off the edge. He's got the feet to handle a lot of the speed. We'll see if that's at left, the left side or left tackle in the NFL. But if not, I love the kid at right tackle. And that's more than I can say for some of the question marks about Connor Williams I have with his play speed and his feet. And then, Orlando Brown. And then Connor Williams with his injury history. So McGlinchey, give me number one. Offensive tackle. Again, I may be on the outside looking in. I may be in the minority. We'll see what happens in the combine. Who knows? A guy like the Western Michigan kid, Okafor, could come in and maybe splash at the combine and jump ahead of him. I think it's doubtful, Mark, that McGlinchey falls to 31. But if he falls anywhere in that range, somebody's going to get a steal on Mike McGlinchey in those mid to late 20s. We'll see what happens.
Since you mentioned it, I do want to ask briefly before we get to the next tackle we're going to talk about. Connor Williams, I saw thoughts of kicking him inside. Is that just people starting to overthink stuff, or is there really a movement that Connor Williams should kick inside? That blew my mind when I saw it.
Well, I'm with you, man. I mean, I don't know why you would, knowing you can get some better value. I always think value, positional right. value, knowing you can get some great value in the second, third, fourth round at guard or in the interior. I don't know why you would want to plug Connor Williams, at least right out the gate. I mean, hey, if he struggles for whatever reason, I don't think he will. But if he struggles that much, sure, I guess you could. It's a situation like Laramie Tunsil in Miami. Regarded as a top five pick. Obviously, we know what happened with the bong mask, yep. And then he falls to Miami there. And they've kicked him inside. I've heard that he actually didn't play phenomenal, even on the inside as well. So it's never a guarantee. You know, it's not like Madden where you can just plug these guys in on the inside and their rating will go up because it's a quote-unquote easier position to play. Connor Williams, man, heading into the year before these injuries, he was, again, I mean, I think I had him mocked to the Bears, who I projected to pick third overall. So, I mean, he was as good as it gets, very athletic for the size. And I think, again, top to bottom, he was as balanced as it comes from a pass blocking and run blocking standpoint, and then the play strength as well. So injuries are a big concern now, especially with a big dude. You worry about knees, ankles, lower back, anything like that with bigger guys, because probably the longevity is not going to be great. They're probably not going to get better before they get worse. So Connor Williams, can't see him on inside at guard. I think you're doing yourself a disservice, too, if you're drafting him in the first round, especially in the top 15, and planning on moving him inside to guard. I just wouldn't do it.
Let's get now to the other guy you wanted to talk about, and somebody that I think has generated some interest, and that's Alex Kappa from Humboldt State. Another offensive tackle in this class. Luke, what are your thoughts on Alex?
I love him. I mean, you were down there at the Senior Bowl. I mean, he showed up and he just, you know, sometimes, Mark, I like to go in to that week at Mobile not watching some guys before I go and just getting my first eye test up close in person. And Kappa blew me away. I mean, he just looks like an NFL offensive lineman. You know, he's built very big at the base, from top to bottom. He's got that play strength. And hey, he's even got the man bun or the ponytail, the long hair, that just kind of that, again, gritty D2 kind of out of nowhere. Who is this guy? You know, and that's what I love about Senior Bowl, by the way, not to get too off topic. It's a great opportunity to see some small school guys that dominated their competition, rightfully so, but to see if they can do it against top tier competition, guys that ultimately they're going to line up against in the NFL as well. And Kappa checked every box for me. 6'7", 305, again, D2, but dominated the guys that, you know, he was put up against. And again, just looked the part of an NFL offensive lineman. Sure, maybe a little bit more of a project. At the end of the day, there's going to be some things that you need to work on and refine, like there's going to be for any prospect, especially a small school guy. But certainly, again, I don't mean to sound redundant, Mark, but in a league that's just so thirsty for offensive tackles and good offensive line play, you find a guy like Kappa. For me, after the Senior Bowl and going back and watching the tape, in this class, he's a top 50 guy. I had him pegged to the Colts at the beginning of round 2, but that certainly doesn't mean that that's where he's etched in and going to go. If the Patriots want to go, with Malcolm Butler, like leave, want to go corner, let's just say, for their first pick, and Kappa's there with that first, second round pick that they own, I think that's pick, what do we got here? That's pick 43. Yeah. Kappa's still there. I love that. And that's even if they do sign Nate Solder, because Kappa's a guy that First of all, you always need a great sixth man or swing tackle, but maybe you want to, you know, kind of let him learn from a guy like Solder. You never know what's going to happen. Injuries always take place. Again, if you want to go on one or two or more of these Super Bowl runs, if you're New England, you have to keep Brady upright. You have to keep the pocket clean. And I think a guy like Kappa is certainly going to help you if anybody were to go down. And then again, maybe after that rookie year, he can start to really start to take place and earn one of those starting roles. I really like Kappa as a top 50 guy.
All right, Luke, let's close this out with a little bit of an exercise. Going to ask you to dive into a scary place, and that's inside the head of Bill Belichick. As we sort of talked about, Patriots have, you know, they've got a pick at the end of the first. They've got two picks in the second. How do you see, sort of game out what you think the Patriots might do with those three picks? Then I'll do the same.
Yeah, I think, again, you know, just looking real quick on SportTrack before I jumped on, looks like you got about 15 mil. We've already, you know, talked about you got to go get Solder, and that means if you got to let Butler go, which sounds like the writing's on the wall, and maybe a guy like Deion Lewis or Rex Burkhead, then that's it is what it is. I mean, thankfully, running back is a position that's a little watered down in the NFL, and every year I say this, this running back class gets better and better. I love this class of running backs. So you can get those guys later. I think if you're sitting there at 31, I think I'm looking for in this class, I think I'm looking for one of these phenomenal cornerbacks to fall in my lap. And really, there's about four or five of them that I have in the top tier. Denzel Ward, which I'm doing a video cut up as we speak, should be out later on zonecoverage.com. Josh Jackson from Iowa. Isaiah Oliver from Colorado. Jair Alexander from Louisville. And then really the sleeper that or the wild card that's getting a lot of love now, as he should, Mike Hughes. Starting to fall in love with this Mike Hughes from UCF. Can do a little bit of everything. Maybe a little undersized, but can do a little bit of everything. So I'm looking at a guy like Mike Hughes. If some of those other top guys are gone, hey, if Isaiah Oliver's there from Colorado or Jair Alexander from Louisville, punch it. Then you come back. You try to grab a guy like Alex Kappa with that first pick. There's some other names there too, you know, Jamarco Jones, Ohio State. You know, we've heard our boy Jeff Risen talk about Tyrell Crosby from Oregon. Haven't watched his tape, but that seems like a kind of the right sweet spot or landing spot for him. So now you've got your corner to replace Malcolm Butler. You've got your offensive tackle or offensive lineman to start to get into the mix as a sixth man or maybe your future replacement for Nate Solder, if and whenever that is. And then you come back and try to get your Deion Lewis or Rex Burkhead kind of replacement, and that you can do with either at the end of the second or in the third round. Kalen Ballage, Arizona State, ripped it up at the Senior Bowl, kind of that dual threat David Johnson type of traits. Great in the passing game, pretty solid in the running game. Maybe a Kerryon Johnson, Auburn. Ito Smith, Southern Mississippi. There's a ton of them, man. Nyheim Hines, North Carolina State. Guys in the third round that should be just sitting there. Rashad Penny, San Diego State. I don't know, and you would know better than I do, the traits that they're going to look for in those positions. Couldn't speak about that off the top of my head, but I certainly think, again, when you're just looking at positional value, cornerback, there's going to be one or two of these studs sitting there fall in your lap at the end of round one, an Alex Kappa type with that first pick in round two, and then eventually, whether you want to wait till the third round or even the fourth, there's going to be a few good running backs sitting there too. So depends on, again, you know, the traits that they look for. I always said this too, and back when New England was kind of the originator of stockpiling a bunch of draft picks before the draft. Yep. You remember that? You know, eight, 9 years ago, every year they had like two firsts or three seconds or three thirds, and then everybody started to copy them. But, you know, they would always draft a guy that was highly regarded right where he should be, and then their next pick, very, very close to that pick, they draft a guy that like nobody had heard of. Right. And you'd sit there and it's like you'd kind of make fun of them, but in 3 or 5 years, the guy that was highly regarded is cut, and the guy that nobody had heard of, Bill Belichick, turns into like a Pro Bowler. Right. So you never know what kind of traits they're looking for. I'm always surprised at their drafts, to be honest. It seems to be from the public. And draft Twitter, people like that. It seems to be one of the lower rated drafts year in and year
every
out.
Year.
But every year. But again, Bill Belichick doesn't care what the public thinks. We know that. He drafts guys that he thinks are coachable. You know, my first mock draft, I had Marcus Davenport at the end of round one. And forget about the top 10 buzz for Davenport. That's ridiculous. But he is a great ball of clay that you could mold. And I think Bill Belichick gets his hands on him. And I think he turns him into maybe a Chandler Jones type down the road. So maybe they want to go that route, you know, end of round one. Maybe then still a Mike Hughes is sitting there early round two. Then maybe an Alex Kapp at the end of round two. So I think having that extra second round pick is huge for the Patriots this year. But first and foremost, you got to go sign Nate Solder. You got to make sure Tom Brady's protected in the pocket these last few years.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, first of all, Belichick's probably going to trade all these picks down anyway. That's kind of his MO. But it's just fine. But, you know, to sort of game it out the way you did, I think they go edge. I think it's Davenport, Arden Key. If those guys are there at the end of the first.
Harold Landry, maybe.
Yeah, Landry, I don't know. If he's there. Because, you know, pass rush is such an issue for these guys. Then I think they address a need with that, you know, first pick in the second round, whatever, you know, 43 or so. You know, if they need to get a corner, maybe it's Hughes or somebody like that that falls. If not, if they've, you know, if they're going to wait on corner, which they might, because there's, you know, kids like Levi Wallace, the kid from Bama, that will he'll have some familiarity with their
It's
scheme.
A deep class. Yeah, it's a deep class. I love so they the can corner wait. Class. Yeah.
Then maybe they do, you know, get a Kappa there or, you know, Teller if he checks out with what they want to do.
Crosby then, from Oregon.
And then at the end of the second, if he continues to rise, and I've mocked this a couple of times already, but Kyle LaLetta, the Richmond quarterback.
Love it.
Because they need to figure out the next guy after Brady. I think LaLetta could do their 95% of what they do offensively with the arm strength that he has. Obviously, it's not a power arm, but he can give you what you run right now offensively. They can have time to develop him. So that's kind of the way I'd go. I'd say Davenport. Then they hopefully, you know, they go offensive line with, you know, maybe Kappa there, like you talked about him, and talked him up, or Teller. And then LaLetta. That's what I think sitting here right now on, you know, mid-February. But
and I love that too, Merck, because, again, you didn't touch on running back, and that's okay because, again, then so you can deep. Still go. It's so deep, man. Yeah. Every year it's so deep. And I think I talk about this at least for 2 minutes on every single podcast I've done so far this year, that positional value, yes, you usually get what you pay for if you want to go grab Zeke or Fournette or Gurley in the top 10, but you can go get Kareem Hunt, Delvin Cooks, Jordan Howards on day two and three. And again, I just think the positional value, similar to interior offensive line, you just don't necessarily need to use early picks on those. Use them at the positions that are going to drop off real quick if you don't get one in the first round or two. So I like that scenario as well, Mark. And you touched on it. I don't know the cornerback situation as well as you do for the Patriots. I don't know their depth. I think, again, somebody's going to be sitting. One of those five guys are probably going to be sitting there and fall in their lap. But if they don't want to go their own, they want to go edge. The kid from Oklahoma that I still can't pronounce his name is probably going to be sitting there. Marcus Davenport, again, I would love to just see a guy like Belichick get his hands on Davenport, because he's going to need to be coached right. He's going to need to be developed. And so many times we see these guys go to the wrong team or the wrong coach that just can't get the most out of them or maximize their skill set, and it ends up being a waste. You know, Tonnell Passano, I loved last year from Villanova. Long, lanky, was at Senior Bowl. Don't know how well he's developed in his first year at Kansas City, but similar to him in the traits. So we'll see what happens. If you want to wait on corner, though, there's so many guys I like in the second tier. MJ Stewart, North Carolina. Cameron Kelly, San Diego State. Mike Hughes is pushing himself again into that first tier. And you mentioned Levi Wallace. I was really impressed with Levi Wallace down at Mobile, Alabama. Yeah. I know he's undersized. He doesn't look the part, but hell, Trey Waynes is undersized. I mean, that guy looks like a 10th grader out on the field. Right. And I'm telling you, the dude can ball. So, I mean, you can wait on corner, I think, in this class with one of those two second-round picks. So that's a great – oh, Carlton Davis, Auburn.
Oh, right.
If run any type of zone scheme at all, he might be the best maybe press or guy at the line and then running any type of zone scheme. So there's a ton of them is my point. And then, of course, you mentioned it, you can wait on running back all day. So I certainly like that scenario as well. Having that extra second is going to be huge for the Patriots.
I think so. And before we wrap this up, an interesting sort of analogy popped into my head. I want to get your thoughts on it because we heard a lot, you know, going into Mobile – early in the week, you know, we saw Daniel Jeremiah had, you know, had Davenport in his top 10, had him coming off the board 7 in a mock to the Bucks. High, but, you know, raw, talented guy. Obviously, we'll need some work, some development, but the raw tools are there. And we're all on the outside saying, look, you know, he needs to slide. He needs to go to a place where he can develop. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's the edge analogy to Josh Allen. Because it's a similar sort of argument. Because Allen, raw tools, you need somebody that can mold that lump of clay that he is right now into something great. So we need him to go to the right spot. So if you're talking Josh Allen in the top 10, I'm not on board. But if you tell me Josh Allen comes off the board at, say, 25, you know, something where like there, or even 31 to New England, I'm fine with
it. Yeah, it's a great analogy. You're right. I mean, apples to apples there, just different positions. And I think the thing that's going to separate those two, and this is obvious, everybody knows this, is the positional value of quarterback. I mean, quarterback, if you don't have one, you have to go try to get one. You can't be complacent and sit there and say, oh, well, next year we'll try to go get our guy and we'll keep building the defense. No, you have to continue to try to take stabs at these quarterbacks. And that's why Josh Allen's intriguing. Certainly, again, you can't build them any better, I don't think, you know, the size, the build, the arm strength, everything else. But again, just inconsistencies all up and down the board. And people are going to say, and this is fine, people are going to say he's missing a starting center, he's missing a receiver, he's missing his running back. And that's fair. But anytime you have a completion percentage less than 60%, especially in a small program, I mean, Derek Carr came out of Fresno State and had like over 70%. Completion percentage. And you know, people are always going to find ways to pick apart prospects. People said Carr threw a lot of bubble screens, you know, and short passes. Well, I just think that, again, you know, his 56% career completion percentage, Josh Allen, that is, it scares the hell out of me, Mark. And I think, again, you can't build him any better. But again, if I need a quarterback, if I can let Josh Allen sit even 1 year, we see what that can do. It can do wonders. I know everybody's impatient nowadays. You got to win now. But I see what wonders it does when you let a quarterback sit. You can go up and down the list. Aaron Rodgers to Jimmy Garoppolo. Yep. I think that Josh Allen could be a franchise quarterback. But I certainly like that analogy. Marcus Davenport, same thing. Small school, maybe a little inconsistent. But everything's there. I mean, the stuff that you can't teach, right? The size. The traits, the length, the burst. Marcus Davenport's got it. Top 10 for me, no way. Because top 10, you can't miss on a top. You miss on a top 10 pick, you know, put in your 2 week notice and just head out. You know what I mean? I mean, from a front office perspective, because that will set you back too far. So, and there might not be, besides Chubb, really a locked top 10 edge guy, because Landry's got his issues. Arden Key's super inconsistent. In fact, didn't he quit football for a hot second? And Davenport's coming from a small school. So you got to take a stab eventually, but I can't do that in the top 10. I have to hit. And that's why, again, going back to Mike McGlinchey, I like McGlinchey more than the Orlando Brown and the Connor Williams, because I know what I'm going to get. I'm not going to miss. Even if I put him at the right side like Jack Conklin, I'm going to hit on that pick, and I'm going to survive another day.
That's fantastic. Luke, tremendous, tremendous stuff. Before we go, plug some stuff, let people know where to find you, what to look for next.
For sure. You mentioned at the top, at Luke Spinman, _Spinman on Twitter, ripping out new episodes of the Draft Rap podcast about twice a week. Just had Joe Marino on, our boy from NDT Scouting. Absolutely killed it. We talked about how to fix the Cleveland Browns with all that ammo and the Buffalo Bills. Maybe the Bills, check this out, Mark, just real quick. What do you think about that? Maybe the Bills want to use those two picks at 21-22 and probably a future pick and move up with either the Giants at 2 or the Browns at 4 and go get their quarterback. Do you think that's unrealistic for the Buffalo Bills with all that ammo to do that?
No, they've certainly got the ammo to get up. And, you know, the Bills are definitely a team that needs to fix the quarterback position, because obviously they've given up on Tyrod Taylor. They're going to move on from there. We saw Nathan Peterman last year. He's clearly not the answer long term. Maybe as a backup, sure, but they got to get a guy in this offseason. Maybe they try to get Cousins. Haven't heard a lot about Cousins being linked to Buffalo, but yeah, they've got the ammo. They've got the ammo with those two picks, and then obviously, you know, a future first rounder perhaps as well to go and get a guy. Can they get to 2 with the Giants move?
I don't know. Stockpile?
I mean, maybe, you know, maybe they say, look, we don't need to go quarterback at 2. We don't need to go quarterback this year because we've still got Eli for another couple of years. We can stockpile picks, make one last run with Eli, and then get a guy next year for life after Eli. So maybe they could get to 2 If they do, you're going to get a good one.
That's what I'm thinking, too. And I think, again, I think you got to throw a player in there as well. You give them the two first-round picks, and you get them, say, the offensive lineman Cordy Glenn, because we know they missed on Eric Flowers. Again, similar to Breeze and the Saints, similar to the Patriots and Tom Brady. You got about 3-4 years left with Eli, in my opinion. You got to keep them upright, though. These pure pocket passers, they need a great O-line. I think Cordy Glenn, you ship him out because they hit on Deion Dawkins last year. You give them their two first and maybe next year's first. Yeah, I mean, that's a big jump from 21 to 2. Yeah. And the Giants are set up for 2 years there. They can go grab, you know, whatever with Cordy Glenn, they can go grab, you know, a Tremaine Edmonds inside linebacker and a Derwin James if they want, or, you know, the corners that we were talking about, maybe Denzel Ward. I don't think Eli Apple's going to last too much longer there. Maybe Josh Jackson. You can do some major damage in one draft and offseason for any team in the NFL. As we've seen, you can really flip a lot of things. I think they get Beckham back. I don't know where Marshall's at, but maybe you get Marshall, a veteran guy. We saw them hit on the tight end, the rookie last year. He's great. And then Sterling Shepard. But Cordy Glenn is the secret in that whole mix. I think that would be the catalyst with a couple firsts. We'll see what happens, but certainly going to be fun, man. That's why I love the draft. So check out those draft wrap episodes. You can check them out on my Twitter, again, Luke_Spinman, or on Zone Coverage, zonecoverage.com. A lot of my draft work. I got a new Denzel Ward video cut up piece that I'm working on right now. Should be out later this week.
Fantastic stuff. Again, please follow Luke on Twitter. As you can tell, just knows this stuff inside and out. One of the best guests we've had on this show. That will do it for today's episode. I will be back tomorrow. Until then, keep it locked right here to me, Mark Schofield, and Locked On Patriots.